Veterans Radio is dedicated to all the men and women who have served or are currently serving in the Armed Forces of the United States of America. Today's Veterans Radio is brought to you by U.S. Wings. U.S. Wings is a U.S. manufacturer of the finest quality military leather flight jackets and much, much more. For more information about U.S. Wings, go to uswings.com. And the Marine Scholars Program at Ave Maria University. Go to avemaria.edu for more information about this great scholarship program. That's avemaria.edu.
From the studios of Ave Maria Radio in Ann Arbor, this is Veterans Radio. And now, here's your host, Dale Fromberry.
And good morning, America, and welcome to Veterans Radio. My name is Dale Fromberry, and I have the honor and privilege of being your host today on Veterans Radio. And we're going to be talking to a good friend of Veterans Radio. That's going to be Mike Moon Mullins, and we're going to be talking about stories. How do we get our veterans to tell their stories? This is what Veterans Radio is all about, and this is what Mike writes about in his books and his service back to the veteran community. And we want to encourage you to give us a call today if you've got a story you'd like to tell. That's 877-573-7825. 877-573-7825. We want to hear from you. We want to hear some story ideas from you. We are trying to expand our markets and our stories. We got an email actually this week. Bob was going to talk about mail call. We got a mail call from a Joe Orr down in Naples, Florida, that suggested that we do a story about chaplains. Specifically, Father Vincent Capodanno. I'm not very good at my pronunciations, but that's anyway. Vincent Capodanno, he's a Congressional Medal of Honor recipient. And Joe thought that we should tell some stories about chaplains. Now, we've done a couple in the past. You can go to our archives and find some of those. Father Capon, a number of chaplain stories. So we're really excited about that. And we appreciate Joe sending us, and we're going to follow up on this story and see if we can do one in the near future. But we need to hear from you also. So if you've got a story idea, just go to veteransradio.net, click on Contact Us, and let us know what story you would like to tell. Maybe you want to participate in putting the program together. We're looking for what we call contributors. Everybody that seems to be involved with the program right now, we're all Army people. And so we need somebody from the Navy, from the Marines, from the Air Force, from the Coast Guard. So if you've got aspirations to be on the air, on radio, let us know, and we'll be happy to talk to you. Maybe we can get you on here as a contributor, and maybe we can work together, especially all of you young veterans out there. We need to get your stories out there, too. We're going to be back in just a moment. We're going to take our first break. We're going to be back with Mike Moon Mullins, and we're going to be talking about stories. You're listening to Veterans Radio.
You have honorably served the United States and the Marine Corps in times of peace and war. Now we would like to serve you. The Marine Scholars Program covers the total cost of attending Ave Maria University. By combining resources from the Ave Maria University Marine Scholars Funding, federal financial aid entitlements, and the GI Bill, the benefits are granted for the duration of the recipient's study at Ave Maria University, contingent upon good conduct and good academic standing. The Marine Scholars Program is open to all reserve and active component Marines and other combat veterans of Operation Enduring Freedom and Operation Iraqi Freedom who have honorably served our country. Please visit us online at www.avemaria.edu or call the Assistant Director of Admissions at 239-280-2552. You helped us. Now let us help you. Semper Fi.
Raise my hand, raise my weapon, now I raise my voice. For the brave, those who serve, I will carry the torch. For the day, for the moment, we decided to serve. For your lives, for our country, made the ultimate choice to defend learned to stand tall through the fire, through it all. Always ready, we stood by your side. Here we've been together, won't back down, we will fight for your freedom we've given.
And that was Here We've Been. That was a song from a CD, I almost called it an album, a CD by four troops, and the four troops are Iraq and Afghanistan veterans, and they've got a couple of CDs out there, and I played that one specifically for our guest today, and I want to welcome back to Veterans Radio, Mike Moon Mullins. Mike, welcome back to Veterans Radio.
Good morning, Dale. Glad to be here.
It is a privilege to talk to you again, and you sent me an email back last Memorial Day and said I had to listen to that song, so that's why I, my memory works most of the time, so I figured
it's a wonderful, it's a wonderful CD.
It is, and I encourage people to go out and listen to it, or actually to buy it, because a fairly large percentage of the profits go to veterans, different veterans organizations.
Support. Yeah, I think they had three of them.
Yep. So it goes to three military support charities. Anyhow, that's why we played that, so you could do that. I've got my good
friend. I appreciate
it. Well, I've got my friend Mike Mullins on, and Mike is a multiple award-winning author of a number of different books. The first one was Vietnam in Verse, Poetry for Beer Drinkers. He's also a co-author of Kings of the Green Jelly Moon, the book, and the author of his latest book to come out that we're talking about today is Out of the Mist, Memories of War. Mike is a Vietnam veteran. With the 199th Light Infantry in 1968-69, he's currently, are you still Vice President of the Military Writers Society of America?
Yes, sir, I am.
And you are a proud supporter of the Wounded Warrior Project.
Yes, sir.
And one of the reasons I have Mike on is because he's also one of the best storytellers that I know.
Well, I appreciate that. I think I had a friend who's also in our group say one time that when he read my stories, he felt like he was sitting at the kitchen table talking, and that's, I think that is exactly what I want to do, and that's what I want, how I want people to feel.
Well, that's one of the reasons that when we first started Veterans Radio, it was one of the things that we all wanted to do. We thought, wouldn't it be cool kind of have a program where you could just, it's like you're sitting in the barracks or on the ship or wherever it is that you were, and you're just talking to each other and telling
your
stories.
You do put people at ease, and when I've listened, I've always been impressed with how comfortable they get fairly quickly, even if they haven't done it before.
Well, and that's why we're here today. We want to get people to start telling their stories a little bit more. In your book, The Out of the Mist, Memories of War, you've talked to a number of different people, and I'd like you to kind of use your process for getting people to tell their stories to you.
Well, you know, it's odd how it works out. Sometimes they cross your path when you're not looking. Sometimes you'll hear somebody make a comment that, hey, there's more to that. And then there are other times people aim them at you. They know that they need, well, they have in my case. They know that they need to talk. It's time to talk. And finding a way... I just go in and be me. I don't want them to feel like they're being pressured. They don't have to remember things in order, because none of us has memories that are sequential. You know, just relax and talk. And it's not an interview. It's not a pressure situation. Take your time and talk. And I think one of the things that helps me, and I think you too, Dale, is the fact that we've been there.
Mm-hmm.
And in some cases, it makes a huge difference, because they can, they know that we will identify with some of their fears, some of their concerns, and some of their experiences.
I think it's so important to let them know that you have, as you said, you know, have been there, just so that you can empathize. And even if you didn't go through this, the same scenarios or storylines that they went through, because obviously there were so many different branches of the service and so many different stories out there, that at least we can empathize with them, and they know that we're not going to, you know, we're not going to judge them. And I think that that's what's so important about telling your stories, is because if you don't tell your stories, and you mentioned this almost right off the bat, then you don't know anything about, you know, you don't leave any history behind, and, you know, your family wants to know who you were. And
yeah. Yes, sir. That's exactly right. And sometimes they're the most reluctant to ask a question because they don't want to step on something that's painful.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they know that they've, you learn enough from your family sometimes to realize that where the sensitive areas are. And out of love and respect, a lot of times you avoid them. And in so doing, it can slip through your fingers because time is a friend, but it's also an enemy. It's a fact of life. And that story can disappear in a moment's notice.
You wrote a couple of stories like that, and I've had my own experience where there have been people we wanted to get on the program that had been in World War II, and unfortunately, by the time we got the time to get them on the air, they were gone. And so that story was gone. And I feel so bad for the, you know, their grandchildren and great-grandchildren, because as you get older, and maybe people out there can relate to this, if you can relate to what we're talking about today, give us a story here. We want to hear about yours at 877-573-7825. We're talking with Mike Mullins about his new book in a roundabout way, Out of the Mist, Memories of War. But if we lose our history, then, you know, we're, as we say, you know, we're always doomed to repeat it. But if we don't find out what grandfather did or great-grandfather did, we lose our own heritage. And I think that that might be happening to people in today's generation. And I want to impress upon them to get these stories out of these older members of your family. And believe it or not, those of you that are coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan, someday you're going to be the older members of your family. And people aren't going to remember you with, the way that you want them to unless you tell them their stories.
Yes, and it's a serious issue with me. Having lost my father early, at age 57, I had pieces of his. And I never thought about him being gone.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm trying to, you just flashed a picture of him in World War II. And I've had to piece things together from living relatives. And in my book, I write about a man named Claude Williams, who my older son discovered, who was actually with Dad in World War II. And I called Claude, and after a couple of phone conversations, I got a chance to talk to him and get a sense of what they went through. And these stories are so important because, you know, somebody sat in an office somewhere and makes plans for all of our events, whether they're private or military. You know, there's a plan that we're working toward. And I love talking to the people that turn the plans into action. And they're right next to you sometimes in the diner, and you don't know it. So I've got to where I listen for a phrase here or a key word there or some indication that there may be something I can do with a person when I meet them. And it doesn't always work. It doesn't always work out because you'll get told no. It's like trying to sell a refrigerator.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some people will tell you no. But others will suddenly, you know, they'll sense something about you that you're sincere, that you seriously care, and that it's time. You know, they realize it's time, too. And there's a man in my book, Ralph Dodge, who I wrote about. Met him on Veterans Day at a restaurant that was giving free meals to veterans.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, being there, I knew he was a veteran. But he made himself available by talking to one of my grandchildren and giving him a quarter. And my grandson said, "Did you fight?" Well, we ended up in a conversation. I ended up talking to him, and I found out he was a radar operator, a B-61 in World War II. And we went on from there. So, as I said, sometimes they cross your path, and other times you've got to knock on the door.
You do have to knock on the door, and sometimes they won't talk to you, and I think that, you know, you and I are determined to get as many of these stories recorded somewhere so that the next generation of that particular family can go in there and say, oh, Grandma or Grandpa did that, because we're not just talking about men here. My mother was worked in the war factories during World War II, and so many of the other ones out there, and we've had some of these people on Veterans Radio, and their stories are just as fascinating as somebody landing on D-Day. You know, the amount of sacrifice that they had to do in order to keep the country going during World War II, and it's something that we can't quite understand today because there's such a limited amount of people in the military. I was talking with my intern this morning about that, and she mentioned that you know, less than 1% of America's population is involved in the military today, and so there's this real disconnect. And we have, you know, you and I and people like us are the ones that are going to have to record these people's stories, because what will happen is that somebody will write a story that doesn't know, you know, doesn't have the background, let's put it that way, and it'll start twisting in the wind, and it will end up, you know, not necessarily being the truth. There'll be some sort of bias to it. And we just want to get the true stories out, and that's what's so important. That's why I want you to give us a call here at Veterans Radio today. That's at 877-573-7825. If you have a story, what did you do in basic? Where did you go? Were you in Vietnam? Were you in Korea? Were you in peacetime military? Were you on a ship in the Mediterranean? Give us a call. Some of these stories, not every war story has to be sad and have a moral to it. Some of them were just funny. And some of them were obviously very sad. But think about those men and women that you were with during your time in the service. And I was just, you know, I'm sitting here thinking, I'm flashing all these, you know, this is what happens when I do these things. You know, all these pictures of these guys, in my case, are flashing before me, and I'm trying to even remember what their real names were. Because everybody had a nickname.
Yes, sir. I don't think people realize that we're existing on a different level in those situations, and nicknames become an identifier. And there are times, well, you know, in an operation in the jungle, I saw the two or three people ahead of me and the two or three people behind me. The other 130 were scattered somewhere out of my sight. Mm-hmm. And you could go day after day and not really come in contact with some of those people, but yet you were there sharing the same experience.
I mean,
how many people in flights that you went on changed on a daily basis, and the chopper that was just next to you had people in that you didn't know, but you knew of, you might have heard their nicknames, mm-hmm. but you couldn't go look for them on the wall because their nicknames aren't on the wall.
No, luckily some of them are not, because we would not be on the radio if we used some of their nicknames out loud. But when you were mentioning that, Mike, I think it's important for people to understand. It's like when you tell somebody that you were in Vietnam and they say, oh, did you know so-and-so? Well, no, there were, you know, how many million people were there? But you never know.
And that's right.
Because, as you mentioned, you got a contact with somebody that you'd been with. And I got an email just a couple of weeks ago that said, I know somebody that was a door gunner in your company the same time you were there, and he thinks he knows you. Well, you know, he doesn't know my full name. I was just, you know, one of these Wally Warrant pilots that had, you know, T-Berry on the back of his helmet. And that's he says, no, I knew that guy. And so, you know, we're working on, you know, getting together and seeing what kind of stories we can come up with that we remember. And I think that, again, those are the things that I think is so important, because you and I and many, all those veterans that are out there, you've got stories inside of you that we need to get out. And even if you don't know the guy's name, you can say, you know, I knew a guy, and just go from there.
Yes. Yes. And by the way, for anybody listening, all you helicopter jockeys are nuts.
Thank you very much.
We love you, though. That's why in my first book, I did two tribute poems to one to Medevac and one to our air mobile units that took us in and out. And, hey, we look for you. We look for you.
Well, you know, it again, as I look back on it now, it was such a privilege to be able to do that. It was much more of a privilege to take you out of a firefight than to take you into one. But it was always a really good sensation when we would get back, and, you know, maybe we were able to bring everybody back that we had taken out. And, you know, they always say that, you know, helicopter pilots especially are God's own lunatics. And it's just like, that's why they have young people, you know, fight wars, is because we become so consumed with saving or, you know, the person next to us. That becomes our world. We don't care about the politics of any of that. We just want to make sure that whoever's in front of us, whoever's in back of us, gets back.
And yes, sir.
Because you are so dependent upon them. And I think that's something in the civilian world that it'd be nice if that could transfer over and maybe people could be a little bit nicer to each other every once in a while.
Well, you know, that experience, and that's, I hope that I can get some of that through in my stories. You never live more in the moment, and you never have a better opportunity to understand adrenaline junkies.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you live on the edge, and you know there's no yesterday and there's no tomorrow. There's only right now.
Right.
And when I'm writing and when I meet some of these people, I get that sense. And for just a few minutes, when they're sitting with me and their eyes are distant, there's a 16-millimeter loop going through their mind, giving them images, which one leads to another. And they're back in that moment. And sometimes it brings laughs, sometimes it brings tears. But it always brings something.
I want to talk about some of the people that are in your book when we get the opportunity to just tell the stories. Now, you are, three generations now that have been in the military? Four? Probably more?
Well, there have been a bunch of us. My son is the third generation in my with the combat infantry badge. And I had several family members that have served. Actually, three in World War II, and we've had several since. I think we've been continuing, somebody from the family's continually served since about 1939.
You wrote a poem, I believe it was about your son, and it's a pretty powerful one, I think, and it talks about when he had when he shot somebody for the first time, blinded is what it is. And,
yes, sir.
Do you happen to have that in front of you?
I've got my book. I could find that.
264. We're talking with Mike Mullins, Moon Mullins, for those of you. Are you named after the cartoon character? Is that your nickname from there?
Yes, and I think every Mullins of my family has been Moon. When I was a kid, my dad was Moon Mullins. I was half Moon. My brother was quarter Moon.
Oh. I forgot to find a picture of that old cartoon.
Gasoline Alley.
Oh, I've got somebody that I want to get on right away here, Mike. It's Charlie from Tasmania in Australia.
All right.
And Charlie, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Dale, hi.
Hi, welcome.
I haven't spoken to you since quite some time, since Static Era, that's the program. But I just noticed today that Mike was going to be on there. And he was in the 199th back in 1968-9. I wondered whether our paths crossed, actually. Could I have a quick word with Mike? It's 1:15 in the morning, so I want to get back to bed.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll tell you what. We'll put you back on hold, and Nina will get your contact number or give you Mike's phone number, and then you can do it that way. Were you down there in Longthorn? Were you in Longthorn?
Sorry?
When you were in Vietnam, were you in Long Thon?
I was close by, but we were actually stationed with elements of the 199th in 68, mid-68 in a fire support base, Concord, just outside of Long Bien.
Okay. All right. I think I'm familiar.
And I just wondered whether Mike was there as well.
Okay. Well, I think there were some Aussies with us at the Pineapple Groves.
Yeah, I don't remember the Pineapple Grove so much. Were you there in July 68?
Yes, sir.
You were. So were you in a big base called Concord? We were there for about 6 weeks. We were stationed up on perimeter. You guys were stationed over the other side.
Well, I'm sure we were close to it. But I spent very, very little time in base camps. Not in the main ones. We did a lot of work. We built quite a few that weren't even named till after we left. I think you're perfectly aware of how that works.
Well, this one was pretty permanent. I think it wasn't a low key one. We were there blocking during the year. Just it was post tech, of course, and blocking the any advances on Long Bin and. The big Ben Lara base.
Yes, sir. I'm familiar with it, but I didn't spend any time there.
Okay. Charlie, we're gonna let you go because your connection is not really that good, and I don't know if you.
Yeah, it's not real hot, is it?
No. The string is just.
Give me a chance to get back to bed anyway, Dale.
All right. Thank you so very much for calling, and we'll make sure that we get in touch with you or get connect you up with Mike, and we can find out some more information.
Yeah. Oh, great. Okay. Well, you should have my email there anyway.
Okay. All right.
If you dig deep enough, you'll find it.
Thanks, Sherling.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Good day, mate, as they say.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Well, folks, there's somebody that called in from a little bit far away. And we want you to give us a call and tell us your story. Maybe you knew one of us. We don't know. Give us a call here at 877-573-7825. And tell us, what was it like when you were in the service? I'm going to go back to Mike and this poem that he wrote to his son. It's called Blinded. And have you got it there, Mike?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
And it was one of those events that you don't anticipate. You know, we're sitting in the room together watching TV, and all of a sudden there's dead silence. And I look over at my son. And he's not with me. And I could tell that whatever was going through his mind was serious. There's a picture of him now. And I ask him, what's up? What are you thinking about? And you want me to read it?
Yes, if you would.
My son and I sat sharing small talk. I found myself talking to myself. He was blinded, had a faraway look. Perhaps memory was off the shelf. It was December 11th, meaningful to him. I called to him, got a blank stare. It was something I had to pry loose then. I was unsure if he would even share. Where are you, son? Where have you gone? You are with me, but are you, son? He looked at me, suddenly back in my home. His mind had left, leaving me alone. On this day in 2001, I got my first kills. Actually, there were three downed. I used a 40-mic grenade launcher. Your version was the old thumper. I looked at him, holding back my concern. I know what he feels right now. That kind of memory lingers, even burns. Each of us handles it this somehow. Dad, do you ever remember your first kill? I sat silently for a moment then, too. Son, I never looked him in the eyes. Still, I cannot swear I got a kill like you. I fired like hell when I was fired on, as you. But I may have closed my eyes. I did not want to know. That part is very true. Mine were not as personalized. He makes me think even now, my son does. He is a warrior, a professional. His ghosts are his own until memory floods. I was lucky, or just forgetful.
Thank you. We'll be right back after this message.
The Medal of Honor is the highest award for valor in combat given a member of the Armed Forces of the United States. There have been over 3,400 recipients of the nation's highest award. This is one of them. First Lieutenant Jack Jacobs, although seriously wounded, made repeated trips across an open rice paddy, evacuating wounded and their weapons. Details after this.
As a veteran of Iraq or Afghanistan, joining IAVA.org really helps in the transition home. It's a network of OIF and OEF vets like me who've got your back here, just like we did over there. That means when you need help navigating the GI Bill, we've got your back. And when you're dealing with the transition home, we've got your back. Or when you just want someone to share stories with, we've got your back. Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America is there for you. Join our community at IAVA.org. We've got your back.
Brought to you by IAVA and the Ad Council.
Jacob served as an assistant battalion advisor in Kien Phong Province, Republic of Vietnam. The battalion was advancing when it came under intense heavy machine gun and mortar fire. Jacobs called for and directed airstrikes on the enemy positions. Due to the intensity of the enemy fire and heavy casualties to the command group, including the company commander, the attack stopped and the friendly troops became disorganized. Wounded by mortar fragments, Jacobs assumed command of the company, ordered a withdrawal from the exposed position, and established a defensive perimeter. Despite heavy bleeding from head wounds that impaired his vision, Jacobs returned under intense fire to evacuate a seriously wounded advisor to safety, where he administered life-saving first aid. He then returned through heavy automatic weapons fire to evacuate the wounded company commander. Jacobs made repeated trips across the fire-swept open rice paddies, evacuating wounded and their weapons. On three separate occasions, Jacobs drove off Viet Cong squads who were searching for Allied wounded and weapons, single-handedly killing three and wounding several others. His actions saved the lives of a U.S. advisor and 13 Allied soldiers. The Medal of Honor series is a production of Veterans Radio.
Why do I serve in the U.S. Navy?
For freedom.
Freedom of religion.
What America stands for.
Why do I serve in the U.S. Navy? For honor.
Everybody. And watch out for everybody.
Freedom to vote.
Democracy.
Freedom to go outside and play with my kids.
I joined the Navy to serve my country.
Every freedom that we have.
The right to raise our kids in peace.
My little brother.
My wife.
My kids.
Our children's children.
The United States Navy.
It's not for ourselves alone that we serve.
And we're back on Veterans Radio talking with Mike Moon Mullins, one of many Moon Mullins that are out there. But we're talking about his book, Out of the Mist, Memories of War. And Mike, just before we took a break, read the poem about his son called Blinded. And it was such a universal story that was in that poem, Mike. How did he react to it when you read it to him?
I couldn't read it to him. I had to hand it to him.
It's a pretty emotional poem.
Yeah, it's a very difficult one to read. I've got a few like that.
Yeah, you do, and I want to encourage people to buy this book, Out of the Mist, Memories of War by Mike Moon Mullins. You can get it on Amazon. You can get it probably most anywhere online, because it's just filled with really great stories. And the reason I had Mike on the program is that there was a story in here about a friend of yours who didn't want to talk to you about his stories of coming back from Vietnam, but he sent you a letter.
Yes.
Describing some incidents. Could you talk about him?
Yeah, my friend Dave O'Neill. He and I went to high school together, and when he got to Nam, he ended up involved in a lot of interesting operations, and he and I talk, and this is one thing that I think is important for anybody that wants to be a storyteller or a writer. When you give somebody your word that you will or you will not do something, live up to it. People in our community soon know whether they can trust you to talk to you, And that makes a huge difference. Well, Dave wanted to talk, and he shared many, many things with me, but he didn't want to specifically reveal anything different for this book. Yet, he thought about it, and he thought about it, and he decided that he just wanted to talk about some very positive experiences, because they were so very different than some other veterans had when they came home. And he wrote his experiences to me, which I'd known about, but he wrote them down himself on his returns home. He came home three times because he did, as I recall, 27 months total in a combat situation in Vietnam. But he felt like that was a story he could share. It would make him feel better and might make people realize, if I decided to go with it, that there were other experiences too besides just the experiences many had walking in the crowds of people calling them baby burner and spitting on them.
Mm-hmm.
And I got it and I was thrilled. Dave's an extremely bright man. And when I read what he wrote, I decided, well, I'm just going to use this unfiltered, you know, do what a writer does, you know, with editing and those kinds of things. But I said, you know, and I called him and told him, I'm going to use it just this way, Dave. He said, you're not really. I said, yes, sir, I am. Because when people read my stuff, I want them to know that it's the truth and it's unfiltered and it's the way I heard it, it's the way I'm telling it. And I said, here, you've given me a chance to let you tell your own, and I'm going to give you the vehicle. So he did, and I did, and I think it worked out wonderfully. It was an incredible way to end my book. There are a lot of ups and downs emotionally in the book, and there's some funny stuff, and there's some serious stuff. But Dave allowed me the opportunity to end my book on a positive note. And sometimes when veterans are telling their stories, that's not always the case.
Right.
So he's a dear friend. He's been through a lot of things in his life, as we all have. And I was thrilled to give him a chance to be a part of what I was doing. And he found out he could open up and do so safely.
There are many people that were involved in particular operations that, you know, that had signed the paper or promised that they would never reveal what really happened. And I think that when we honor their commitment to that promise, it says something about them, obviously, and it also says something about you, Mike, that, you know a lot more than you're willing than you can tell about this man. But the stories he told in the book were about good things that happened to him when he got home. And this is what I want to kind of touch on, because I've got a story I want to tell that I already told you a little bit. But you mentioned that the time period that we came home, this is in 1968, 69, 70, whenever it was, the country was in turmoil, not that it's not today, it seems. But we had gone through a lot of things during the 1960s, including obviously the war in Vietnam, but the assassinations of the Kennedys and Martin Luther King and Malcolm X, and boy, you know, you just felt like the whole country was going to blow up. And many of our, I don't know what you want to call them, but our sacred cows that we had listened to while we were growing up suddenly kind of turned the other way and just threw us all off kilter. And but he talked about being welcomed home. Could you just kind of relay at least one of those to us?
Well, I think the one that made me laugh, because I could relate to it so well, was he'd come home to Indiana and he'd spent some time there and visited with family there, and he decided to drive to Michigan to see his dad. And he had bought an old Studebaker Hawk. Those of our generation are going to remember that they were pretty hot little cars.
Yeah.
And Dave had hit the open road and was heading north and had the tunes on the radio, and he was in another world. All of a sudden, that world got interrupted by flashing red and blue lights. He found himself running over 100 miles an hour, and somebody else found him, too, in the middle of the night. And when the policeman stopped him, before they got through the ticket process, he realized he had a veteran, and he asked Dave about it. And Dave said, yeah, this is my second trip home. And police officers was astonished that it was a second trip. And then Dave said, well, I'm going back in just another week or whatever it was. And the police officer was terribly concerned about him and reminded him then that it'd be kind of dumb to survive all he'd survived and come home and get killed on the road. And they had a good conversation there beside the road that night. And he told Dave, he said, I want you to slow it down and go visit your dad and enjoy it because I love what you're doing for our country. I respect what you're doing. And I want you to come home again. So just slow down. Enjoy your family. Enjoy your time. And realize that there are a lot of us here, in spite of everything that's going on, that do care about you and want you to be okay. And that's pretty much what it was in a nutshell. They let Dave go.
You know, I had a similar incident to that, going a little too quickly. When I got home, I had a 1969 Pontiac Le Mans. Looked like a bumblebee. It was yellow with a black Landau top on it. I don't know how fast the thing can go. It was my version of a Top Gun car.
And well, that was what they built the GTO on.
And everybody, of course, you mentioned about, you know, pilots being nuts. We all had motorcycles and we all had fast cars. And so we were driving home one time from Alabama to New Jersey, going through North Carolina or something like that. And I went up this hill and came down the other side and was going rather rapidly, and there was another policeman waiting at the top of the hill, and he just kind of pulled me over, and he said, do you know how fast you were going? And I said, you know, 65. And he goes, let's try 95. And I said, okay. And he took my license, and then he walked around the back of the car, and he saw the sticker for Fort Rucker on there, and he says, obviously, he says, you're in the military and all this other stuff. And I said, yeah. And he told me a similar story. He just said, you know, why do you want to get killed doing this when he didn't get killed doing that? And he says, I think I'm going to let you go again. I said, well, how did you catch me? And he says, well, we have this new thing called radar. And he's looking at this thing, and there was another car coming down the hill on the other side, and he pointed his little gun at it, and he was doing 83 or something like that. And he says, okay, he says, I'll see you later. I'm going to pull this guy over. And so he just let me go. And but you know, it's funny, during that time period that we came home, we're coming up to a break here in about 2 minutes. If you want to tell us a story, please give us a call here at 877-573-7825. I told Mike this story earlier. When I went to Vietnam, we flew into San Francisco, and when I got there, they told us that we weren't going to be able to get out for a couple of days, gave us some money, and said, come back, you know, in 2 or 3 days. And because we were, you know, Wally Warrants or warrant officers at the time, they let us go. And since we were in San Francisco, where would you go in 1968? You'd go to Haight-Ashbury to see what in the world with all the excitement over there. Now, it's not that we didn't fit in. I mean, our hair was a little bit short. We had to buy clothes. And anyway, we went into this one little bar, which, for those of you out there that don't be offended, it was a topless bar, but that's all that they had in Haight-Ashbury, I think. And as we walked in, there were three of us, and the woman at the bar says, are you boys coming or going? And we said, well, we're just going. And then she says, you're not paying. You're not paying. And she sat us down in a booth and brought us whatever drinks we wanted and asked some of the dancers to come down and sit with us. And we did. it was amazing to sit there and try and talk to women who weren't wearing their shirts. And you know, and everybody was being so nice to us. And it's just true. And I was talking to my friend Ray about that just, you know, a couple of days ago. And he says, oh, yeah. He says, I can remember that. We didn't have to pay for anything. And I said, I know. Can you believe that? And that's, you know, as bad as the stories may be about the way that we were received in parts of the country, we were right in the middle of the hippie nation, and people were very welcoming to us. We're going to continue this after this next break. You're listening to Veterans Radio.
You have honorably served the United States and the Marine Corps in times of peace and war. Now we would like to serve you. The Marine Scholars Program covers the total cost of attending Ave Maria University. By combining resources from the Ave Maria University Marine Scholars Funding, federal financial aid entitlements, and the GI Bill, the benefits are granted for the duration of the recipient's study at Ave Maria University, contingent upon good conduct and good academic standing. The Marine Scholars Program is open to all reserve and active component Marines and other combat veterans of Operation Enduring Freedom and Operation Iraqi Freedom who have honorably served our country. Please visit us online at www.avemaria.edu or call the Assistant Director of Admissions at 239-280-2552. You helped us. Now let us help you. Semper Fi.
Live, 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 ride, live. Lord, I love my liberty.
Lord, I love my liberty.
But I know freedom don't come free.
But I know freedom don't come free.
Wrong is wrong and right is right.
Wrong is wrong and right is right.
Sometimes, son, you gotta fight to fight.
Sometimes, son, you gotta fight to fight.
The sound of
1, 2.
Sound of
3, 4.
United we stand.
1, 2, 3, 4, 1.
And that is from our good friend Michael J. Martin, who happens to live down near Nashville in Tennessee, and I know you're down there too, Mike. And
I'm east of him.
Yeah. Anyway, Michael J. Martin is a true troubadour. He tells his stories through music, much like you tell your stories through your book. And we're hoping that Michael J. is feeling well. He's been kind of sick for a while, and I couldn't find the song I was looking for that he wrote called The VA Shuffle. And I know that you've had some experiences with them, and I can't get into we can talk about those a little bit, but we have a great VA facility here in Ann Arbor, so we don't want to, you know, get, although we do have a little bit of a backup, I understand, for disability claims here, too. But anyway, we're talking with Mike Moon Mullins, author of Out of the Mist, Memories of War, and some other interesting books called Vietnam in Verse, Poetry for Beer Drinkers, and the co-author of The Kings of the Green Jolly Moon, the book. And Mike is involved with the Military Writers Society of America, is where I met him and where I've met so many great storytellers that are involved with that organization. And I've been real pleased to be able to bring on as many of those authors as I can to talk about their stories and to talk about their moms and their dads you know, it's something that you were talking about yesterday when you mentioned that Bill McDonald, who was the founder of Military Writers, told you to always end on a high note.
He believes in it with all his heart. And in most situations, there are high notes. And I think one of the problems that all of us get into at times is we dwell on the low.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to take a breath, step back, and remember the other ones, and use those to leverage something positive in you so that you can adjust and adapt and overcome all the demons in the night.
I think that's so important. You mentioned the demons in the night. I was just reading another one of your little stories in here that you were, you know, when you woke up and thought it was 1968, but it was really it was 2007, and you had just kind of flashed back on that thing. You know, whatever had happened to you that particular day. And sometimes those dates do come back and haunt us a little bit, but I want people to remember, when you're telling your stories, to get those stories out, remember that you have the advantage of telling them. You're still here. And that's something to be, wow, to be ecstatic about, I think, because of the, you know, what could have happened didn't. And even though you may have survivor's remorse, like many of us, you know, I've gone through, you know, why did this happen to Joe or John and not me? There's a reason for that. And sometimes I think that's, there's a higher power out there that wants you to continue on and to tell your stories and to tell their stories. Because, you know, being a name on a wall is really important, but wouldn't it be nice to know about all those people?
If we weren't here, nobody would know.
That's right. Can you imagine if they hadn't all gotten together and got that wall built, what would have been the legacy of Vietnam?
Well, a lot of people would prefer it had been buried and stayed buried. I think from the political perspective, And, you know, you mentioned so many things. I could talk for hours and hours and hours. Can we do a telethon?
I think we may have to do a telethon at some point. We're going to have to give you, you know, when we expand, hopefully, and set up our Veterans Radio Network, which has always been a dream of mine, to have other people with programs telling their stories or playing their music, or, the, you know, people from the Navy have their own site that they can go to and hear, you know, only about the Navy or only about Marines. I think it's a great, you know, the technology is there for us to do that, and I think it's important that we do.
Well, you know, that's survivor's guilt, Dale. I don't know how many people are listening, but I'll bet all who are have a touch of it at times. And we need to acknowledge it, talk about it, tell it to somebody, because we're creating a whole lot more of it right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen it in my son. And I've had the discussion with him, and there's nobody harder to talk to than your own blood.
Mm-hmm.
It's easier to get a story from a complete stranger.
Oh, I know. It's, you know, talking to a relative is like pulling teeth sometimes, because, you know, I don't know what the reason is. I wanted you to talk in our last segment of the program about what goes on down there in Indiana with your healing field. Could you tell people about what you're doing there?
The Vietnam Veterans Organization, which is not the VVA. This is a separate independent group that formed near Kokomo, Indiana, almost 29 years ago. A group of people, a dear friend of mine who was in I graduated from high school with as well, was among them. And they decided that it was time to give ourselves a welcome home, since nobody else did. And they organized a small reunion. And at the time when we started, and I've gone to all of them since, at the time we started in 83, it was a small get-together, or they thought it was going to be, behind a Ramada Inn there in Kokomo, Indiana. But, of course, that motel's changed names and gone and is something different today. But vendors showed up, people slept in tents, and it was an incredible sharing. They found out that they might not be able to talk at home, but when they were with a bunch of other vets, they could get a lot of stuff off their chests. And it turned into an annual event, and it has grown and grown and grown. And it's usually the middle of September, like the third weekend, and it runs for 4 days now. And we bought our own ground, and we squeeze 1,000 campsites in on 39 acres. And it's a city for 4 days. And we have to estimate, because of the comings and goings, but around 40,000 vets and veteran supporters through there in that time period. And a lot of music, a lot of campfires, a lot of memories. And I've often made the joke, you know, we look at pictures of ourselves 40-some years ago, when you look at these bunch of fat, crippled old dudes wandering around out there on the golf carts, helping each other on and off, and think, did we ever really do this? But if you sit and talk, you know they did. And we call the place the Healing Field because so many good things have happened to people there. They've gotten things off their chest. They've cried until the tears went from muddy color to clear.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of my way of saying that, you know, they've cleaned their system. And we've got people that are so dedicated to being there that they've used their vacation each year. I met one guy who, he's broke. God's been good to me. I've been very fortunate. Some haven't been so fortunate.
Mm-hmm.
And it was so important for this man to be at our reunion that he would take $5 a week out of his check and put it in an envelope so he could make that journey in September. And I've got a friend who's from Maine, who stays a month in a little camper. And because of the camaraderie, the storytelling, a place where he can be what he can, what he is, what he was without guilt. And it's an open, sharing, healing kind of time. It's an unusual event. It's probably the largest independent reunion there is in the country.
Well, I know there's a lot of veterans from our area that go down to Kokomo because he keeps saying daily, you got to go down to Kokomo. And I'm like, geez, I can't, 40,000 people. I get nervous around 40,000 people. But our partner, Gary Lilly, he used to go down there quite often. And he used to say that it was just such a great event. And I know that the other Vietnam veterans that are listening right now are probably remembering the last time they were down there. And it was just a great opportunity to do that. One of our sponsors, U.S. Wings, started doing a similar thing down in Ohio last year, and he's hoping that it will grow to something of that size down in Hudson, Ohio, again this year. And it's a great thing that these people are doing that. I love the dedication that you and your workers there have to put on these conferences, these reunions, because these people need a lot of them. I can't say them. A lot of us need them, and we don't even realize it.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yeah. You know, all of a sudden you have an itch and you scratch it, you knock the scab off of something.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got to help someplace. You have got to have someplace to go where you cover that wound back up. And that's what that has become for a lot of people. And now they're going because they've got friends there.
Mm-hmm.
They've got people there that they see once a year. And it's a big, big deal. I've developed some good relationships with people that I would not have ever had the chance to meet. And some of them are in my book.
They are.
I told one buddy of mine from Ohio, I said, Ray, you're in the book. He said, why am I in the book? I said, I needed a draft dodger.
We meet everybody at these things. Mike, we got to run. This goes really quickly when you're having fun in this case. So we're going to end this on a high note. And I recommend people to go out and get Mike's book, Out of the Mist, Memories of War, and your other ones. It's Mike Moon Mullins. Google them in there and you'll find them. Mike, thank you so very much for being with us today. And I look forward to seeing you again.
Thank you, Dale. I've really enjoyed it. I could do it and do it and do it.
We'll get you there. Thanks, Mike.
All right, sir. Take care.
Thank you. Thank you all for listening to Veterans Radio. Next week, we're going to be talking with a member of Air America, if you can believe that one, for those of you that wondered about those silver and blue helicopters and airplanes that were flying about Vietnam. His name is Alan Gates. He's got a book about that, and we're going to be talking with him. And coming up, we've got the VA is going to be on again with some more ideas. We're going to be looking at alternative treatments for post-traumatic stress disorder. And coming up in March, we're going to do a program on veterans music. Just like the four troop music that we played earlier, we're going to have groups from around the country sending in their music. So do so. Until next week, you've been listening to Veterans Radio. You are dismissed.
All views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily of Veterans Radio or this station. Veterans Radio is a production of Veterans Radio, LLC.